DMTWclothing.com. Don't make this weird. Whatever it is that you do in life, again, do with your heart, chase your passions, and watch it become reality. That's what we're about.
You guys are going to find some cool items, some MMCast items for sale here in the next 3 weeks. They'll be all launched, and next, you know, more conventions, things like that. So,
welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Mod.
And welcome back to Bachelor's Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What happened to your delivery there? You just, like, lost all of your smooth.
That wasn't smooth? I thought that was a smoother. I think normally
welcome
I'm more
to
of
Masters
like,
of Modern. This is Alex Kessler.
I feel like I could be, I'm more of like a spaz, though. Like the, and welcome back to Masters of Modern.
And to those of you who just found
Sunday,
our podcast.
Sunday.
To those of you who just found our podcast for the first time, I promise you we talk about magic. Let's get into the show.
And the movie Suicide Squad.
No.
Stranger Things, the TV show?
Kessler basically
the
was just like...
Pokemon Go.
Kessler was pretty much just like, well,
what
our podcast
Harry
got
Potter
popular. Our podcast got popular, and I want to find a place that I can talk about things I love. Rather than starting another podcast, I'll just hijack the Magic Podcast.
Harry Potter and the Strange Shop.
Let's start this episode over.
Why? I think this was great.
We just yelled and talked
about. Yeah, no,
over
we're keeping
other.
All this. All right, so today we're talking about tempo.
Okay.
But we should get all of our little shout-outs out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, let's see. Let's see if we can rattle them off.
All right, so first off, Twitter.
Yep. We're on Twitter, at the MMCast.
If you want to interact with us, it's probably the best place. Currently, I just asked everyone a question that we'll probably talk about later in the podcast, so follow us there. Our Patreon, it's how we do a chunk of the things we're able to do.
Yeah, we're like recently we've bought like a new mic and we have been buying small little things and as we develop this video setup that is getting closer and closer by the week, which is very cool. There is
move forward. We got a guy like our friend Mike. We're able to give him some money so he has the time to start posting videos.
Yeah, he's like our engineer.
Avers with things
and then,
helping us with our other videos and
we are personally on Twitter. I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
I'm at Cass Wiley.
You can also find the MMCast on Twitter. On Instagram and Facebook. We're at the MMCast across the board.
We don't have a Snapchat, though.
We don't have a Snapchat, but Instagram's killing that anyway, so it's fine.
Yeah.
And then...
That's happened.
Yeah. And then, of course, we need to remember to mention every week our amazing partnership with DMTW Clothing.
Yeah.
This lifestyle brand. These guys are awesome. We have a playmat that we just made for sale last week, and there's like a few left, I think. Our Patreon members are getting the first few of them. They're signed and numbered. There was only 25 in this first run. Kessler and I kept one each. We are sending out the handful of the Patreon, and then there was like 15 or 16 left for sale, and there's a few of them left, I think. Definitely go to DMTW Clothing. We're running a promo right now.
They're sweet. You get to know what we look like.
Yeah, they're like, it's a really
sweet.
It's a really cool mat. Like, yeah. It looks totally awesome. I'm really proud of it. I think you guys should check it out, and you know, there will be more of this probably product released eventually, but they won't be signed and numbered.
That's what
so
I think of if you're like, well, like I kind of had the old mat, or I don't want to be playing on Ben and Alex's faces. Remember that if, you know, this mat does well, which it is doing well, but if it does super well with your help, other cool stuff will come.
Yeah, there's more products we're working on. But yeah, go to dmtwclothing.com, sign up. There's a promo. If you sign up with your email address, join their list, you'll be entered into a drawing to win one of these mats that we're going to be giving away. That's the squeaking of the mic stand. And of course...
Well, those are pet mouse that we just keep.
Check out our sister podcast, The Command Zone, at rocketjump.com. Jimmy and Josh. We got to play Magic with those guys, the two of us with them last week.
A picture.
It was crazy.
Yeah. People have recommended, and I kind of would love to do this, a episode where we, not telling, like for April Fool's next year, not telling anyone, switch podcasts for a week.
Okay.
Where we do The Command Zone and they do Masters of Modern.
Right.
Which would be pretty great because other than me, none of you play the other person's format.
Yeah, I don't love Commander.
And they have. I've never seen Josh. Maybe they've played against like Modern once.
The last thing I would like to say before we start the episode is congratulations to friend of the podcast, Andrew Brown, for top-8ing yet another top 8 of a Pro Tour.
He's becoming. He's making that like future Hall of Famer argument pretty handedly.
Really ridiculous. I mean, like, I remember when that guy didn't even like to play Constructed. I remember the day that he played his first Standard tournament, and he was like, can I play Archaeomancer in Standard? Isn't that the... Archaeomancer is the one that returns an instant sorcery, right?
Yes.
Yeah, the 4-drop, but he was trying to like play it in like a Delver deck or something like that, or a Delver-style deck from a few years ago.
I mean, like, Standard looks actually kind of sweet right now, like between like Bant and Emerge, T-Merge, which is what Andrew played.
Yeah. Teamwork is sweet. So anyway, that's standard. Congratulations to Andrew. We're proud of him. We love that guy. Let's get into the show.
Cool.
Cool.
Talking about tempo.
We're talking about tempo dash today.
Everything you need to know about tempo. Next in our series of the everything you need to know play styles.
Yes.
Which just happened because I, without realizing, created a naming convention on Twitter or on our episode naming thing because I am a man of habit.
Yes.
Yeah. So how's today going to work?
What is tempo?
What is tempo?
That's what we're going to start with. Tempo
it's like when you're playing an instrument. And
yeah.
You have to like keep on pace, and there's like the little clicky thing on the piano.
Yeah, I mean, tempo is a style of playing magic that is about temporary advantage pressed turn by turn. So you're not throwing haymakers. You're doing things that temporarily swing the game in your favor, gaining incremental
capitalizing
advantage.
Capitalizing on it immediately.
Yeah, capitalizing on it immediately. It's about gaining advantage in the small windows created by those temporary advantages. There have classically been a lot of very famous tempo decks. Tempo's not always something that's good in every format, is the thing. The most famous tempo deck of all time...
I don't know if that's true. I think pretty much every format
has
a tempo deck in it.
Definitely. But, for instance, tempo in Modern has gone in and out of being playable.
I guess my point more is that, like... Every format has a tempo deck that's tier one to tier two, for sure. The question is it like... tempo at times has been the tier one.
Right.
And so when it's not the tier one, it feels like it's not playable. But in reality, it's still like blue-red Delver is a tier 1.5. Or not Delver, but tempo in Modern right now is probably a 1.5 one deck. Like
definitely. I mean, it's always... Because it's like... Because if it comes out correctly, you're going to seem like a genius. That's the thing about tempo, is if it comes out correctly, it seems unbeatable. So, and the cards, like...
What I mean, there's always just something good about playing an early... I mean, okay, so basically what tempo hinges on is you play a early threat, and then the rest of your spells are meant to combination protect your threat and or prevent your opponent from doing what they're trying to do.
Right.
So you're a control deck, but instead of... trying to buy, you know, just stop your opponent, you're really just trying to buy time. So, which is why it's called tempo, because tempo is a time-based word. It has time roots.
Right. it's about pace.
Yeah, so the idea is that, you know, and that's why, like, the most famous tempo deck is normally Delver decks.
Well, the most famous tempo deck of all time is a legacy deck that was originally called Canadian Thresh before the printing of Delver. It used to be played Nimble Mongoose as the only one-drop.
Like famous in history, but, like, I feel like most known tempo deck... by a player born into today's world, Delver.
But I'm saying so,
which is what used to be Canadian Thresh before Delver.
Delver was printed and then it became.
I don't know if I could say Legacy is any more like a deck that's good in Legacy. Is
it just
the
became
most famous
version. Rug Delver, and then when Modern was created, they tried porting Rug Delver over, and it has taken different forms.
Blue white and blue white red Delver was like a standard format dominating. Deck on the level of like what Jund was and what Valakut was and what Fairies was. So
definitely,
like,
I played it. It was fantastic.
Yeah, so like, I think that's where that Delver. I think the modern version, because the first Delver decks that were good at Modern were blue, white, red ones, which were pretty much just straight up ports from that. Then people started messing, and then like, and people tried Teamer. Like those are the two sides you can come
in the
modern
original.
You can either come from Legacy or come from Standard.
Right.
Back then, Standard, because like the problem is there's no Wasteland, like
and
there's no Daze, and Daze and Wasteland are the two biggest
cards.
Tempo cards that are important
and Force, but I mean,
Force of Will is Force, like
every
deck in Legacy plays Force of Will, while like the Daze and Wasteland combo, which are cards that other decks play, but like they're kind of this, I play Delver on turn one, and now you won't play another spell for the rest of the game.
Yep,
and eventually, you know, and so that's kind of what these decks try to do is they play an early threat. Like turn one, turn two, get a threat on the table. And then for the rest of the game, you're locking your opponent out.
Right.
So that your one little threat, be it a 3-2 flyer for one, or a 2-1 for two that creates tokens every time you cast a spell, or Tarmogoyf, is going to kill your opponent before they can stop it.
Yeah, I mean, people have called it Protect the Queen. You play one threat and you protect it. I mean, that's... Sure. Yeah, sure. There's like lots of different ways to describe it. But I mean, and the interesting thing is there's... It's not always like you could describe tempo in Modern as like a Delver deck, basically, is the simplest way to look at it. Play
there's
flip
a few
it
other
and
ways
protect
to
it.
Kind of describe that.
But yeah, but I mean the style of play is sort of like it's that counting turn by turn, okay, what is this cheap spell I have? How's it going to interact? If I play this spell, I keep this mana open for this counter spell. Can I be exact with my mana? Super efficiency. Everything is like 3 or less CMC for the most part. Lots of 2-in-1 drops.
Well, I think that in general, Modern is a tempo format.
There are I mean, Merfolk is a tribal tempo deck.
Merfolk is a tribal tempo deck. I would argue Infect is a tempo deck in many ways.
It's a combo deck. That's the thing.
You have a creature, you play it early, you're attacking with it, and you're doing everything you can to protect that creature to kill your opponent.
But it's non-interactive. In fact, pretty much doesn't interact, so it's not a tempo deck.
Okay.
I don't think. I mean, I think tempo decks historically interact.
Maybe it more moves into a... I guess, fair enough. Game one, you're right. I would say what Infect does do, though, is it definitely sideboards into a tempo deck. Game
sure.
two and game three... against a lot of opponents.
I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, when you look at a Glass Cannon deck in Modern, do you classify a Glass Cannon deck as a combo deck? I've heard people refer to Burn as a combo deck before because it's a series of how many of these things can I play in this many turns to count to this number.
Well, I do think then that, like, and this is a different conversation for a different day necessarily, but there's two types of combo decks, and
right.
I think, and in reality, there's one type of combo deck, and those are decks that, like, all my cards do a specific thing on an axis that my opponent is not ready to handle, and they combine it away that I instantly win.
Right, and it's non-interactive.
And it's... Nah, I don't know if that necessarily has to do with the definition, because, like, Twin was definitively a combo deck, but it had a lot of tempo interaction in it.
If Twin was still legal, this would be a whole different conversation we were having, because that was what made Twin insane, was Twin was just like a blue-red tempo deck that had a combo.
Sure.
I mean, talking to Andrew and Eugene when that was legal, and they were like, so over here, you have your 8 Pokemon cards, and then here's the rest of your deck. And they'd be like, you can either just like play with these fake Magic cards that aren't actually real, but are only good in, like, or,
right.
You, yeah, right? And they would just essentially describe it as like, this is just a really, really, really good blue-red deck, and then if you want to play these 8 cards, you can. You know, and I was always, that's like, I mean, it's true. Like,
sure.
And that's a unique example. There's very few decks ever in Magic's history that have existed where the combo was that powerful.
Right.
Where half your combo was a flying 2/1 card that tapped down a creature. Like,
yeah.
Or a 1/4, but
or a permanent. Yeah.
So.
But, I mean, I guess my point when I was talking about different type of combo decks, there's the combo decks that are, I'm trying to assemble pieces together that make me win. And then there's my deck is all... working towards a goal. So like Storm and Infect and Burn would be the later versus Twin or Amulet Vigor decks or any of those kind of decks that would be more of the former.
Right, definitely.
But back to tempo and not combo because that's not what we're talking about. So there's something I really do want to bring up. So blue in general as a color.
And its relationship to combo.
It's tempo.
To tempo, sorry.
We're talking about combo.
Yeah.
I derailed you.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's okay. Yeah. Let's move on. So, classically, blue cards are control cards. Counterspell is the premier control card of all time, followed by the most basic control card of all time. Jace, Force of Will, all these are very control cards. But Modern has moved blue much more towards tempo-style play. All of its counterspells reward being proactive in the early game because they're all very, very, very quickly fall off once you get past turn 5.
Would you say that Remand is the most tempo card ever printed? it is like the definition of tempo.
I don't know if most, because like Unsummon, Daze. Daze is also like...
Yeah.
Daze is awful after turn 3.
True. Yeah. I mean, Remand, I'll give you that. So in Modern, I think Remand is the most tempo card that exists.
Yeah.
It's a temporary, cheap, efficient counterspell that draws you a card that doesn't actually answer the question long term. I mean, that's as tempo as it gets. Vapor Snag is a super, super tempo-y card. It's not anywhere near as ubiquitous as Remand.
Yeah, I'd say like Vapor Snag. I think I've been testing with Vapor Snag recently because I've been testing with tempo decks.
Yeah.
Getting back to my Geist roots. But I think Vapor Snag is heavily underplayed in Modern.
That card's just sweet.
That card is like very nuts.
Yeah,
like,
especially with Snapcaster.
Like, just like...
I mean, that's what people used to do in Standard. That was awesome. That was so much fun. That was great. I loved Vapor Snagging with Snapcaster.
Right. I'm currently playing a deck that's playing like 3 Vapor Snag, 4 Path, 4 Lightning Bolt, and I'm just like, you're never going to have a creature in play.
Yeah, I mean, so whenever that happens, things swing away from creature decks. But and also, Snag's distinctly bad against decks that have like tons and tons of ETB effects.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which is like collected company decks, which are good in the format, though.
Yeah, Snag against Kitchen Finks is the worst thing ever. It's like so bad.
Yeah, but you know, when they're getting two life, you're snagging it, and then you're swinging it with Geist's Entrapped and doing six to their dome.
Yeah,
it's slightly true. Better.
Right, and I mean, that's so you're defining tempo right now, because right. Long term, if they can continually replay that, and they're going to win. But yeah. If you can, like, that one turn where you're like, all right, I'm going to remand this guy, they'll lose one, then I'll swing for six, they'll replay it, they'll gain two, and then I'll flash it back, same deal, and I win. That's kind of the definition of what tempo looks like. It's like not really worrying about them gaining life, not really worrying as much about what they're doing.
Well, it's interesting because it's a type of deck style that ignores card advantage, which is the opposite of what Classic Control is. It's the opposite of what Jund does. Like, because, you know, I've been on this podcast arguing many a time that Jund and Junk are the true control decks of the format.
Right.
Jund is a deck that you're playing a bunch of cards that stop your opponent from doing stuff and slowly grind them out till you win. Because it plays Tarmogoyf, that's, you know, slightly disagrees with that statement, but
right.
Tarmogoyf has classically been called the best blue card ever printed.
Right.
So, and part of that is these tempo conversations, but if you look at what blue's trying to do in this format, almost every single blue deck is much more along the lines of a tempo deck, and part of that is, like, even Snapcaster Mage is a great tempo play.
Definitely.
Because flashing back Lightning Bolt, using Lightning Bolt early to clear a threat, and then flashing it out later to do that extra 3 damage you need to kill them off, is like a very important play for tempo to be able to do.
Yeah, Bolt Snap Bolt is like one of the all-time tempo plays. Though it's also, weirdly enough, Bolt Snap Bolt has, it's not just a tempo play, it's also a control play in Modern, because the American control decks would like make a living on that move.
Right, but the control decks, I feel like, enjoy more the path snap path plan, where
sure.
Like you're getting rid of that creature forever. It handles any creature you could possibly play. You're just, who cares how many lands they have, because what you're going to do is be more powerful,
right?
And your removal spells are just going to be able to handle anything in that deck anyways, versus Bolt Snap Bolt, which is like I'm taking you out from six life to zero this
right.
turn.
Yep.
Because of my Delver of Secrets, my Young Pyromancer, my Geist of St. Traft, my turn two Snapcaster Mage I just flashed in because I needed a threat in play, did enough damage to you that I can now kill you this way.
It's interesting to see the relationship between blue control and blue tempo in Modern, because it seems like they toe a line together that's like, it sort of seems like, for instance, like let's talk about the Grixis control decks for a minute. There's a version of that Grixis control deck that plays all removal spells. It's just all removal and
right,
a couple creatures.
More the Grixis control.
But that same version of that same deck sub in four creatures and it can feel exactly like a tempo deck.
Right. It subs in the Delve.
Yeah, easily, because all you're doing is the same thing. You're playing a bunch
Tassigers.
Of it's that spell velocity. It's when we talked to Chapin on that episode, and he was telling us about how like it's not about getting card advantage off of a single card. It's about stringing together 1, 2, 3, 4 cards in a row that are maybe each gaining you half a card or so.
Right.
And that's that momentum, that spell velocity, eventually gelling together to create that advantage, which is sort of like. That's a weird hybridized kind of like control meets tempo style of play.
Sure. I mean, like, we talked about this episode, but spell velocity is the effect that, you know, it's not how many cards you're drawing. It's not spell card advantage. It's how many cards you're seeing throughout your game and how you can capitalize on those to take advantage of your opponent to stop them just long enough to kill them.
Right.
And that is all what tempo is. Like, literally, the way these decks work is. I'm trying to just kill you as soon as possible, but instead of comboing out, which is what a lot of decks do, like Infect, or even like Death Shadow Zoo, these are decks that are much more trying to, you know, play a more fair game, but stop you from doing what you're doing once their game plan is online.
Right.
Which is like the reason Delver is such a premier tempo card, even though I currently think it's not that great in Modern.
Right.
Is because. Turn one, how many things? What cards are people playing turn one? Serum Visions. Delver
yep.
of Secrets. Burn plays cards because it's burn.
Yep, Burn plays cards because it's burn. I mean, in fact, we'll play like
a one drop creature or Hierarchs. Like, but like most of the one drops are
so you have like mana creatures.
It's a pretty free turn. There's not a lot of interaction you have to do on turn one. You have time to just kind of lay out a threat and then protect it from that point on.
Yeah.
Which is why Delver is classically one of the better tempo cards. And we were talking about earlier that I think actually turn two now is becoming a little bit more
important
tempo friendly as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's you don't have to answer in Modern, like on turn two. You can't just
the amount
lose.
Of threats, like Infect and Burn are the only two decks I can think of that have threats, and maybe Affinity, that you have to answer their threat turn two or you lose.
I mean, Modern's not designed to be a format where you can lose on turn three.
So you have that extra turn to kind of find the answer you need to answer what they're doing. There's a few decks that like definitely propose a problem, like Death Shadow Zoo can run on turn two, turn three. Infect can do it.
There's a version. There's a version of Storm. Like if they get the Stone Cold Nuts, I think they can still win on turn two.
Yeah.
Right?
And then Elves is another deck that like if I'm playing tempo, like if I don't answer their Elves early, they'll just snowball out of the way for me.
What's it called? The Arcane Resurrection instant speed 2-mana thing.
Gore's Vengeance.
Yeah. It can't win, but it can like.
No, Gore's Vengeance can win on turn two.
It still can?
Yeah. They didn't ban anything out of it.
Oh, because, the whole thing with the Shoal, right?
Yeah, but Grizzle Brand.
I was thinking about cheating in something giant. Anyway, so yeah, that's...
They do cheat something. It's called Grizzle Brand.
Yeah, there's a few... So there's a few...
Draw 30 cards.
There's a few decks. There's a few decks that can do it, but that's not common. And you're not going to ever construct your deck to be able to, like... actually combat a turn two win in Modern. That's stupid. You even probably wouldn't build your deck to combat a turn three win in Modern because they're still very rare.
I do think we still do. Like, we talked about a long time how Splinter Twin decks prevented turn three plays. And I think the format is definitely much more wide open to people playing turn three or three drops, sorcery three drops that aren't in black. But I also think, in fact, Affinity, Burn all still punish the three drop a little bit more heavily than allows you to play them.
Looking back now, do we actually think that the banning of Splinter Twin was the correct move?
Yes.
Right?
I mean, the format definitely is more healthy now. The one argument I'd make is it a more fun format, I guess? And I think it is.
I think what Twin did is it allowed us to stand in this place where we knew the format so well, we had discussed it so many times, that you had this like very clear understanding of what you could and couldn't do in Modern.
Sure.
And I think now it's a little bit more wide open, which is a good thing, but it's also like a hard to understand what's good and not good anymore.
Right.
It used to be sort of easy. Like,
and that's also because we're like we went through like three ban cycles during the GP cycle for Modern.
Yeah.
So we're now in this area where it's just pre-TQs and SEG events and stuff, which we can pay attention to. And like one of the reasons, like Death Shadows has now become a much more popular deck.
Yeah.
Which is like that combined with Delirium has made Misha's Bauble a $30 to $40 card, which is insane. But if we look at kind of what the different decks that are available, a lot of them, you know, they're just kind of, there's the really aggressive creature decks, there's the mid-range decks, there's definitely a good cycle of decks. I do want to do an episode one day on no ban list Modern.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Maybe next week even.
How much would a box of Cold Snap cost at this point? It has to have skyrocketed. It's an uncommon.
Yeah.
Right? There's nothing else.
I don't know if it's gone up. I mean, Cold Snap is like also not, is there anything else on that set?
Dark Depths, I think, right? That's the only card.
But that's just getting reprinted.
Yeah, so Dark Depths and Mishra's Bauble. And I think after that, it's pretty much nothing. I think you're
Lightning Storm?
Yeah, Xur the Enchanter's in that set.
Xur the Enchanter?
There's probably one other legend that we're forgetting. But then aside from that, it's like when that set was out.
Are we going to do that? Oh, I guess we could do that with our core set cycles.
The Cold Snap?
Yeah, when are we going to talk about? Because for those who don't know, we have a site. We're doing a list of. Eventually, we'll get through every set of Modern.
Yeah.
Or every block in Top Modern.
Cards in that
set. But then, like, core sets will be kind of smushed together. I guess we have to do Cold Snap with a core set.
Here's some cards that we're forgetting. Auron Viper. That's a sweet card.
I played against that yesterday in Commander.
Yeah, that card's not actually relevant. Competitive, but that was good in Standard.
Oh, I one-shotted every single person on my table yesterday.
Nice.
With Geist.
Auron Viper. There's Vexing Sphinx, which is that card I love. That 4/4 for 3 with the cumulative upkeep, discard a card thing.
Oh, I actually like that card.
That card's sweet. That card actually is like has
potential. Why are we talking about Cold Snap? All right. One last thing I want to do about tempo, and then we can actually move on to the next thing is I want to do tempo by the turn. I want to go through each turn of the game from turn 1 to turn 6 plus and kind of talk about what the deck is trying to do and should be doing at that point if the plan is going well.
Okay.
Turn 1.
Sorry, I was looking at Cold Snap.
all right, so turn one, you really have two options.
In a tempo deck, yes.
You're setting up future turns, playing cards like Serum Visions.
Serum Visions is the quintessential.
The blue card, mill two, draw card.
Thoughtscour.
Thoughtscour, like those are kind of the two. Maybe Gitaxian Probe if you don't want to pay the life.
Or you're resolving a threat. Or you're resolving a
threat. Or, I'm saying that's like setting up future terms or gaining information or creating card velocity. Or resolving a threat like Delver of Secrets.
Nicotl gets in like an old Countercat deck.
Yeah, Countercat deck.
Or like Swift Spear.
Swift Spear is another good tempo turn one play.
Are there any other like distinctive one drops in tempo decks in Modern? I guess I have, you know, it's possible that you could say Hierarch is a tempo card because there are Bant lists that play like...
Yeah, tempo Bant.
Yeah, like turn one Hierarch into turn two V-Click.
Sure.
That kind of a deck. So, but I mean, yeah, that's like... And it's not really a threat either because it's like an accelerant, but it is kind of a threat. So anyway, yeah, there's like four or five distinctive threats you could play on turn one in Modern.
There's probably some we're not naming, like...
Yeah.
And like, I guess Grixis Control, the third option is discard, I guess.
Yeah.
Some tempo decks are playing a little bit more of a discard game, and that is the last thing you kind of do in turn one. Turn two. Turn two, I feel like, is the key turn for tempo. You have to be laying down a threat or... getting in, protecting the threat that already exists.
See,
like, this is the time you just cast Snapcaster Mage at the end of their turn as a two drop.
I think I disagree that turn two is the distinctive turn in tempo. I think actually the distinctive turn in tempo is turn three. But
I think if you don't do anything turn two in tempo, you're gonna have a real hard time winning.
You have to do something turn two.
I think laying down a threat. Like this is the turn in Modern. Or any in Modern, you have to, like in Legacy, turn one is this turn, but you have to lay a threat down.
Here's the thing though, in Legacy. Turn two Tarmogoyf, backed up by Daze, is a thing. So that's why turn two and what you do on turn two is so important in Legacy because you have a free counterspell.
Well, I'm saying turn one in Legacy is more important because you have Nimble Mongoose and Delver that you're playing turn one. Where Geist is Tarmogoyf is a little bit of like what the Geist threat would be in this format or what your Gurmag Angler would be, which is your later game threat that you can play alongside counter magic. Where in this one, like Pyromancer, Snapcaster Mage, like you need to be playing...
Right, so like
something to get just aggressive.
So like turn one, Seer Visions, hold open, remand on turn two is like probably not good enough. That's pretty control-y, unless you have V click on turn three or something.
Yeah,
I feel you on that in that sense. I was gonna say I think
we talked about earlier. What are they doing on turn two? What's the best thing your opponent can do in turn two in Modern? Other than the few examples we came out where they just like insta win for the most part, they're playing a Bob, they're playing a Tarmogoyf, they're playing. Maybe Young Pyromancer.
Yep.
Maybe out of Burn, you're getting.
Eidolon.
Eidolon of Great Revels. You're getting, you know, right. Storm Electromancer, maybe. But like these are things that you could Lightning Bolt on your upkeep or on your turn without much damage to you. Or decide to, like, you know, if they played it, if you're on the play, you're on the draw, you can Lightning Bolt it if you have to. But in reality, you should be either getting rid of something they're doing or playing. A threat, and I don't think holding up Remand is a good tempo play.
No, and I mean, I suppose there's nothing really that can be played against you on turn two that's just a hard threat that worries you if you are a push damage tempo deck. Because even if it's like a combo deck and they play like Anafenza or Malaira on turn two, it's still just okay, kill it or snag it or something, or even just
right. Like when I say you have to do something on turn two, that includes bolting the creature that they played. Going card for card is fine, it's just. You need to be doing something, and turn two is that turn. And most of the time, it should be playing a threat, unless they play a threat that's more dangerous than your threat. Anafenza with a like, if they go turn one Viscerous Seer, turn two Anafenza, get rid of the Anafenza.
Yeah.
If they play Goro, like Goro's Vengeance is the one deck that's just like, well, you lose. I mean, like, what are you gonna do? But like, that's also just next game you play a much more controlling game, and you just know that that's what they're going to do.
I think the other thing too is that like. Based on your hand, this is why I say turn two or turn three. I mean, they're distinctly the two most important turns for sure. Because by turn four in Modern, you should be... There's a couple things happening. You're worrying about a much stronger thing your opponent can be doing. They're actually getting to the point of like being able to win with a normal curve.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you should be able to do a couple things. You should be like... By turn four in a tempo deck, you should be angling to like, how am I going to win in the next three turns? Like, I'm probably... You know, you should be setting up for it. So... I think turn two is if you have a threat-heavy hand, so you can afford to play that Tarmogoyf and have that Tarmogoyf get pathed if you know if that's whatever. Like if you have another Goyf or if you don't, if it's a hand with like a bunch of spells, maybe like a Spell Pierce and a Goyf, that's where you probably resolve the Remand on turn two, play the Goyf on turn three, holding open Spell Pierce to protect it. And I think that's the kind of game plan you have to decide based on your opening hand because... Tempo is distinctly the kind of deck, I mean, tempo decks, and historically you've seen this as examples like in Fairies back in the day was a great example of this. Twin was just like this, where you have to make the decision at some point. Are you going to go from being interactive control to aggressive? And that's gonna depend on the
Who's the beatdown? Like, that's always kind of the discussion.
And it depends on what's in your hand. So like I said, if you start the game and it's like two Serum Visions, three land, one Tarmogoyf, and a Spell Pierce, like, all right, you're gonna probably play Serum Visions on turn one. You're gonna hope you draw a second threat, and if you don't, you might sandbag that Tarmogoyf until turn three, holding open Spell Pierce because it's your only threat. And if you don't draw another one, and on turn four you haven't done any damage, probably not looking that good. You have to draw a lot of threats to win the game at that point. So that's, I think, where the difference between turn two and turn three. And I would say tempo decks historically probably play between 12 and 16 creatures, usually. I guess 12 is a little light.
12 is the minimum.
Yeah, 12 to 16, but rarely past 16. I've built ones.
I think 12 is probably, I would say 14 is the average.
Yeah.
With two higher end threats and the 12.
I've gone as high as 18 before. Historically, threat 17 and 18 are two copies of eClick whenever I build decks like this.
Okay.
And you cut down, to 17 if you're trying to make room for the extra land or something like that. But I would still say that turn three is the most important turn in a tempo deck in modern. I think it's your opportunity to sort of like jump whatever hurdle is in front of you by like dodging their removal spell or like playing a threat and holding open a piece of counter magic, something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Or it's like play your threat on turn two, they do their thing on turn three, and then it's like you kill that thing and hold open counter magic for your threat that you're now protecting. Something like that, right?
Right.
Or maybe it's like you snag their blocker holding open remand. And now you're setting up like this. Okay, I have my Tarmogoyf. It's got four damage, that's the plan. So anyway.
Yeah. So that's turn two, one, two, three. And then basically it's kind of four, five, and six plus where it's all stop your opponent or you lose.
I mean, by turns four, five, and six in modern, your opponent will be doing something. You can't stop everything they're doing. You're not a control deck. You're not like a straight up, I have an answer for everything you do, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to push damage efficiently.
Sure.
So it's kind of like when people say to you, oh, Goblin Guide is another card that we forgot on turn one that shows up in these decks.
That's much rarer, though. I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Swift Spear is more the.
Yep. Which is and there's a few things. I mean, let's finish the turn things. There's a few. I want to talk about tempo in relationship to some blues tempo and relationship to other colors.
Right.
There's at least a few things I want to talk about. But so turn four, five, and six.
Well, so I think what starts to happen is like somebody will say to you, "All right, good example." When people are talking about burn, they'll say Goblin Guide is the best card in the deck. Usually that's like guys that play like mono red. They'll tell you that that's the best card in the deck. And I'll say to them like, okay, how much damage do you have to get out of a guide to feel like you got your money's worth? And I've heard people say like, okay, you need a minimum of four. You almost will always get a minimum of four. And if you get six, that's just gravy, right? If you get six damage out of a guide, that's like, oh my goodness, this is one mana. So consider the same thing for the cards in your deck, right? If you play a Delver on turn one and you flip your Delver and you actually are able to get in with it twice before they kill it, you get six off a Delver, that's one mana. That's fantastic.
Sure.
You have to have enough threats in the deck to rebound from the fact that they're going to kill your things and interact with you. They're going to resolve things. They're playing powerful cards. So I think turns four through seven, it's a different game. It's like one through three is very much a chess match. It's very much like, okay, I've done this on turn one to set up this on turn three. On turn two, I have to hold this open. And if I don't have enough threats, I have to play this, holding this open to counter your spell. By turn four, it's like, all right, how much more damage do I have to get in, right? What's my plan?
Well,
are you at nine?
It a little bit more of a, I need, how many bolts can I draw to kill you?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like, okay, and this is where you'll see people sometimes flash and Snapcaster on turn two as just an aggressive threat based on the density of their hand. Threat density is everything. So that's, I think, what turn four is, the first turn where it's like, is it my turn to push more damage? Am I getting super aggressive here? Do I have my foot on your throat a little bit? Or do I need to protect this threat? Or, like, I think it's kind of reading your opponent. Because by turn six and seven, you really have to be close to winning, if not having already won in a deck like this, because your card power is not high enough. The later turns in tempo decks are terrible. Like, they're just bad. Because you're
only out as like your best play you have is Snapcaster Mage.
Nobody wants to draw Delver on turn seven.
Right.
You know? Just nobody. Like, it just gets worse and worse and worse. So I think if you're still worried about things on turn seven in a tempo deck, be good at magic.
Look, yeah.
Be good at magic, because it's probably not going to be that pretty.
All right, so I want to talk about a little bit of Rich Relations color and problems that these kind of decks face. So the first is blue-white, and we kind of touched on this, of how Path is really good in some of these decks. The problem is, and I think we actually just got kind of an answer to this problem, is that Mana Leak and Path to Exile are terrible together.
Yeah.
And Path is really bad at allowing your tempo deck to stop them with the counter magic available in Modern, because so many of them require your opponent to be low on lands.
Right.
Because of bad spell. Now, the new counterspell that just came out, the Venser counterspell.
Oh, yeah.
The one that
Unsubstantiate?
I think so. One blue, one colorless, bounce a creature or counter or bounce a spell on the stack.
The Venser spell.
Yeah, yeah, the Venser spell.
Yeah.
I think it's better because the Mana Leak, at least, because late game, at worst, you can still bounce their creature to their hand.
Okay.
And end of their turn. So instead of them just getting to recast it, it's still kind of buying you a turn versus Mana Leak or Remand, where sometimes you're just stuck. Like, they cast a Tarmogoyf with four mana open.
Right.
Remand's just okay then because you draw a card, but then you're just paying a cycle slash target player needs to spend two more mana than they normally would, but they still have a Tarmogoyf.
Right.
So that's definitely something that helped blue-white. Blue-red, the main important thing is that this is a format where fetches are everywhere.
Yep.
And Snap and Bolt are really good together.
Yeah, I mean, I think you would argue that blue-red is the premier tempo color in Modern, or color combination in Modern, right?
Yeah, and I've been arguing for a while that blue-red and black-green are the two best color combinations in Modern.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
By a pretty wide margin.
I'm sort of surprised that blue-black's never broken through. Just sweet Dimir decks. There's, so many good Dimir cards.
I was talking to someone recently. I think the problem with blue-black is that blue-black was really, really good in a Magic world that had bad creatures, and creatures are just so much better.
Yeah,
that blue black just doesn't have the tools to be able to deal with, and non creature like permanents are so much better that like blue black, and spells are way worse. So like what blue black was good against fighting against is not as good, and what blue black is bad against is better.
Yeah, true. I'm still going through these cold snap cards.
blue
oh
green,
wow, that's an uncommon. Yeah,
yeah.
Counterbalance is $33. That's I guess cold snap packs are very expensive, because if you have two $33 uncommons in the set,
yeah, it seems pretty good. Yeah. Though I wonder if it's caught up to Mishra's Bauble being $33.
I mean, even the snow covered island is $1.50. Dark Depths being a rare.
Snow colored mountain is the one that's more expensive.
$57 for Dark Depths.
How much is snow colored mountain?
Snow covered mountain is $2.
Yeah.
Scrying Sheets is $6. That's a sweet card. Keep going. I'll keep looking.
Okay.
Oh, Braid of Fire is $10.
That's the cumulative upkeep. You get them red mana. Card's cool. Really bad in Modern because of Abrupt Decay. But
yep.
All right. So let's stop looking at. All right. So that's kind of tempo. We're at the 37 minute mark.
Yep.
I do have a vampire list that people kept asking about online. And so we're going to talk about it.
Cool.
Another brew. Because we're in Innistrad. How many times do we get to talk about spirits, vampires, werewolves, and zombies?
And we asked some of you guys recently, like, were you interested at all in us doing a brew each week, even if it is just for a few minutes? And some of you liked it, so yep. here we go.
So, vampires.
Sweet.
Currently, the deck is playing 31 creatures.
31
seven spells,
creatures.
And 22 lands.
Wow.
It definitely is a little bit of a madness deck.
Okay.
Its reach is built off the fact that Blood Artist exists.
Yep.
And so, and it's a vampire. So, like, late game, you get a Blood Artist in play, and you have Blood Ghasts, Viscera Seers, and you can kind of just have this cycle drain situation.
Right.
But it also has just the fact that Vampire Nocturnus, if you have a black card on top of your deck and you have enough creatures in play already, just outright wins you the game.
Vampire Nocturnus is super sweet. So that's the 4-drop, black, 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 one?
It's one black, black, black. 3 black, 1.
Yeah.
3/3. Play with the top card of your library revealed. As long as the top card of your library is black, Vampire Nocturnus and other vampire creatures you control get +2/+1 and have flying.
That card's so sweet.
Yeah. It's like pretty nuts.
Like, well, never gets played.
Things that like have changed is, you know, there's a lot of new vampire cards, and the deck's currently playing 12 red spells between 4 Lightning Bolt, 4 Falconwrath Gorger, and 4 Stormkick Noble. Falconwrath Gorger is kind of one of the key cards of the deck, though. So, like, this is the first 2-1 for one with upside that's ever been printed in red.
Is that really true?
Yeah, this is not even a drop. There's no drawback on this card.
The 2-1s and the 2-2s are always like, if you take damage or you can't block.
It takes damage, it can't block. Right. Like, this is blatantly just a 2-1 for one.
Right.
With no downside.
Sweet.
and technically a huge upside, because the fact that it gives each vampire creature you control madness is kind of a huge game, because you get to play cards like Heir of Falkenwrath and the new Lord, which kind of makes the deck possible, Stormkirk Condemned. Stormkirk Condemned, which is the black-black, discard a card. Yes. Strom. Oh, there's an R there. Stromkirk. Yeah.
Sage.
Vampires you control get +1/+1 until end of turn. Active ability only each once each turn. But, like, first off, Blood Gas is great with this.
Yep.
Asylum Visitor is a really good card in this kind of format.
I love Asylum Visitor.
Which is, like, the other one that kind of pushes the deck over the top. It's a 3-1 for 2.
Yep.
Which is already, like, Borderland, a thing you could consider playing.
Right.
Has Madness for 2. Black and a colorless, and then at the beginning of each player's upkeep, if that player has no cards in hand, you draw a card and lose that one life.
Okay.
So, late game, you get two of these in play, you're drawing three threats a turn to your opponents, and maybe even more if your opponent has no cards in hand. You start getting very, very deep into the land of velocity and threats.
We've talked a lot about Asylum Visitor on here. It's just like we think that card's just like very pushed and hasn't actually seen like anywhere near enough play. So what are your seven spells?
Four Lightning Bolt, one Call of the Bloodline, and two Dismember. Though I think it's correct to do if you Inquisition of Kozilex over Dismembers.
Call of the Bloodline?
Call of the Bloodline is the enchantment that's like an all-star in Shadow of Innistrad. It's like one of the most important cards in SOI draft. It's a black and a colorless enchantment.
Oh, I know this one.
Mana, discard a card, put a 1/1 black vampire knight creature token with lifelink onto the battlefield, activate this once each turn.
And this, yeah, because this is one of your madness enablers.
It's one of the madness enablers, but it also like gets a lot of tokens in the play and makes every land you draw late game a 1/1 lifelink vampire, which, you know, is okay, but also just can be nuts because it's a life, like lifelink is the ability to not be underestimated. And the fact that, you know, with Vampire Nocturnus, these get real big real quick.
What's the name of the vampire that you named where you discard a card to give your vampires +1/+1 to end of turn?
Stromkirk Condemned.
That's the card, yeah, okay.
I said it correctly.
Yeah.
Yay.
Good for you. I mean, yeah, this feels like the tribal density here was pushed pretty heavily, pretty well.
Like, the whole deck is one drops and two drops. It's playing 4, 8, 10 one drops. Actually, I can do this with a little graph. 14 one drops, 18 two drops. 2-3 drops and 4-4 drops.
This deck
would Vampire Nocturnus and one Kalidus.
This deck would outclass my Spirits deck, I'm pretty sure.
Maybe.
It would I think we just bum rush it.
I think yeah, maybe with the weird 4 drop that locks things down.
Except that the weird 4 drop that locks things down might actually be like my best bet against you, because it's big enough to block and it has an interactive
element. But like turn 4 hopefully. Yeah, I mean maybe. But then I have Blood Guest, Blood Artist, Viscera Seer combo where I just like sit there and let you do nothing and drain you for...
Lingering Souls would be good against you. It would protect me, but it's true. The Blood Artist thing is tough.
Right. What's cool about the deck is it has a few different plans of attack that all kind of attack. And that's the key to these kind of decks. Like Merfolk has this, like Elves has this, where you need to have multiple directions to attack your opponent from.
Right.
Otherwise, your deck doesn't... Like, it can be just hated out really easily. If you're an aggro deck that's only trying to attack your opponent, you're not going to get very far. But the fact that this deck can very easily go from, I'm trying to attack my opponent,
right,
to on the ground, to I'm trying to attack my opponent with flyers that are much bigger because of Vampire Nocturnus, to I'm trying to get my Kalidus big,
right,
to my Blood Artist, Blood Ghasts, and Viscerous and Sack Outlets are just going to make my creatures much bigger, like, or just drain you for life, is a very strong versatility that the deck kind of has access to.
Right, it's kind of like Affinity being able to win with Gropper, Aether Grid, whatever that card's called.
Yeah.
What's that card called?
Yeah, I think, I mean...
Gropper?
You're asking me how to say a card correctly? So that's the deck. I mean, obviously, control, it can move into a little bit more of a control game plan with, you know, adding Kalidus and Olivia. I actually am playing one Vampire Hexmage on the sideboard for those pesky Planeswalkers that are out there, because I think that's sick, but...
Are you playing any Chronozoas?
No. Why?
Because of Hexmage?
No. So yeah, that's the vampire list. We'll have this list on our page.
Yep.
Yeah. Cool. So I think we've done a tribal deck of every variety for Shadows of Innistrad.
Yeah.
I think you even did a werewolf deck at one point.
We talked about it maybe.
And we did like a bunch of zombie ones.
I kept trying with werewolves. I had that one.
Anything in this new set that kind of made werewolves worth it?
It's just, and it's a shame that we're not going to get werewolves again for a long time. It's just we need that.
I don't know if that's true.
We need that other 2-drop.
Wizards has kind of said that they're willing maybe to do werewolves, just they won't be flip cards.
Got it. I need another sweet 2-drop. That's what it is. If you give me a sweet 2-drop in red-green, I can make that deck work. It got close. It got close. I was so close.
What about a wolf 2-drop lord?
Yeah, I would love it.
Like a green, all wolves get +1/+0.
Yeah.
For
it'd be sick. 2/2. It'd be sick. That plus mare, plus Immerwolf, plus the Silver for Partisan and like targeted things. And it's just nuts. Silver for Partisan is a card that I know there's like the combo you can do with it, but I guarantee that's unexplored. That's going to turn into a thing. I was so close.
Isn't the card also nuts with the red goblin guy?
That's what I'm saying. That's the combo.
That's the combo. That just like things into play.
I still love the idea of playing it with travel preparations. It's still like my favorite thing in the world.
Okay.
It's so sweet. It's so sweet.
All right. So that's kind of the episode for today. You haven't experienced any of the non-magic things that I mean, like, do you have a non-magic thing you want to talk about before we end the episode?
No, I unfortunately have to get to the I have to get to the next job now. Okay. So.
I could just talk about all the things once you leave.
No. Guys, thank you so much for listening to the episode today. Be sure to check out the Command Zone on RocketJump.com. It's our sister podcast. DMTWClothing.com. They're our partners. We're working to make clothing and awesome products and video content that will be coming out very soon. And find us on Twitter at the MMCast.
Check out the mat that they're selling. We're at the MMCast on pretty much everything. Check out our Patreon.
Yeah.
Please donate, guys. I mean, it definitely helps us accomplish stuff, helps us pay the bills. Please also subscribe to our YouTube channel. We are releasing videos there, and we will start releasing like a ton of videos there.
Soon.
And most of it's going to be magic. I might finally get to capitalize on having my non-magic, my non-magic minute. You can have your magic minute at the beginning of the week, and I'll have my non-magic minute at the end of the week. It'll be great.
It's a good thing. All
right. Yeah.
Cool.
And then Suicide Squad was like a C-D+.
All right. Bye, guys.
Right, bye.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.